Welcome to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today's show is the variety show of clips from the week. There's Paige talking about pruning a tree in need downtown. There's Deirdre talking about being a massage therapist. There's some songs, announcements, and some random short clips from around town. So in Monday's Gazette, there was a little blurb.
Woman unhappy with tree care brings own clippers, pruning saw. Northampton. Police responded to a report Saturday at 9:10 a.m. of a woman pruning a tree at King and Merrick Streets. Officers found the 61-year-old Northampton female using a pruning saw and hedge clippers to cut off limbs of the tree. She told police she is unhappy with the care the tree is receiving from the city's Department of Public Works. The woman was not arrested. Police said they plan to determine the owner of the tree, located near the Registry of Deeds.
I should clarify, Paige was not using hedge clippers. Anyway, that's what the paper said. But I have Paige's side of the story. So, Paige, can you tell me about your pruning adventure the other day?
The other day was actually this morning.
Oh, that was this morning.
This was this morning, Saturday morning. It was probably 9 o'clock. I headed downtown with my brand new silky pruning saw. And my loppers.
This brand new pruning saw, it looks like a silver-barreled revolver.
It's really beautiful.
16 inches long.
Yeah, it's about 16 inches long.
It's got the case and the handle curved like a revolver.
Yeah, and what I like about this saw is how narrow it is from the teeth to the spine. Uh-huh. You can really get into tight places.
Oh, yeah, like V's in the tree.
Yeah, in spaces where there might be multiple branches and you're aiming to take out a particular one, you can really maneuver this. Not that I got much experience using it this morning. I just bought this saw yesterday and was really looking forward to using it. So I headed downtown to work on a really beautiful tree that is at the Hall of Records. And this is a tree that I noticed yesterday.
That's
has,
like on King Street between Calvin and the probate court.
Yes, it's right on King Street, right at the probate building there. And yesterday I had walked past it and noticed all these stub cuts. Well, a stub cut is when you just choose a random place and you just saw that branch down, leaving a stub. Mm-hmm. And some of these stubs were 6 inches long. There's one that's still there that's about 2 feet long and broken at the end. And a lot of times what happens with stub cuts is that stub wood dies. And, you know, it heals differently from if you do the cut flush up to the branch collar. You know, this is an area right at the branch that heals in a way that is much better for the tree. And it can kind of close in and seal that cut.
Yeah, could you just clarify that again? Like not flush with the branch, but flush with the branch collar?
Yes. So instead of cutting something pretty far out, you want to bring it up to the trunk or to the nearest branch. And in doing that, you just leave a little bit enough of space. There's this, the branch collar is this kind of wrinkled area where that branch joins up with the next branch or the trunk. And you want to leave that branch collar, and just outside of it is where you do a good pruning cut. Well, these branches had not been pruned that way, so these were dead stubs, very rugged, raw-looking, broken stubs. So I got a couple of them down. I started using my new saw on two that were really, you know, about 6 inches long. And I did a few other cuts with my loppers to take the weight off of another area that I was going to cut down. And these were branches that go over the road there, and you can tell that it's been whacked quite a bit because the branches head down and can be hit by cars going in that little alley between the Calvin Theater and the Hall of Records. Instead of pruning off a few little branches that are an inch and a half around, take that whole branch back. If we know that that little branch is heading right over into where cars pass early on, when that branch is young, to prune that off. If you leave the branch and just take the things at the where the cars would be coming, they'll continue to grow, possibly.
And sucker that cut.
Sucker there, and then it has to be done again and again. But the tree's form can be worked with at a young age.
How did you reach the branches?
The DPW apparently has been using this area around this tree to store snow. So there was a very crisp, firm mountain of snow about 10 feet high.
10 feet?
It's very high. And I like to take advantage of the snow, especially as a short person. I've been taking advantage of the snow in many places to be able to achieve, like on snowshoes, being able to snowshoe places and be much higher than I am in my normal terrestrial self. I enjoy being so elevated. In this case, I didn't use snowshoes. I was just on foot and able to scramble up this mountain and reach branches that I would never be able to reach otherwise. So I was really enjoying working on this, and people were going by saying, "Good for you, great job, this is beautiful, it's so wonderful to have our trees cared for." And then three cruisers stopped over, and five officers, or maybe it was six, got out. Shortly after that, one cruiser with a couple guys did leave. So these three officers grilled me about what I was doing and whether I had permission. And I told them that no, I didn't. I mean, of course, in retrospect, I feel that I should have said that a higher power has invited me to come and work on the care of this tree. But I did tell them that this tree has been horribly pruned and needed to be cared for.
You said one of the officers that you'd known before, and he was kind of a nice officer.
Yeah.
Had to do his officerly job.
The main one seemed to have, you know, in any interaction I'd had with him before, he seemed like a very nice guy, but he was quite stern this morning, all three of them. And
wait, what did they tell you not to do?
They told me that it is not okay to cut down city trees or trees that belong to other people. And I said, "I'm not cutting down this tree. Look at this tree. This is a magnificent tree. And I'm using my time, my tools."
Your little handsaw.
My new little handsaw. I said, "You guys got to see this." I was trying to show them my saw that's so beautiful. They didn't want to look at the saw and kind of hear about how to do pruning in such a way that you don't end up with stub cuts.
You were explaining
it. I was trying to explain to them this wasn't a random, I wasn't whacking away at a tree. So in any case, they said, "We need to know that you're not going to be doing this anymore." And I said, "Well, I can't guarantee you that. This is part of what I do. I live in this city, and I really care about the trees in the city. And I see quite a bit of neglect. And some of that's benign neglect, you know. I mean, think about it. The DPW's got a lot going on, and they probably can't take care of every branch on every tree."
And this is the time to prune, which for the DPW is also the time to plow snow.
That's right. Exactly. I mean, look at this mountain of snow. They have a lot going on. And so I want to do what I can do to help out. on behalf of these trees. I want to work with these trees. And they said, no, you can't do that. You may not cut trees. And if you do, again, you know, you can count on us stopping you again. And I said, well, officer, if that's what it takes to get care and attention for trees, that's okay. And they mentioned that there's a new tree warden. I said, yeah, I know Rich Parasoliti. I did urge them. I said, why don't you call Rich? Let him know. So they wouldn't let me finish the branch that I had been working on. And
so they didn't take your saw away, though.
They didn't take my saw away. Whoa. They had. They would have been having a whole other situation to deal with. So anyway, it just brings up the question of citizen advocacy for trees. And I don't believe that it's okay for random cutting of trees. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I think there needs to be a lot of consideration going into every cut. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't random. This was intended for the well-being of this really beautiful tree. You know, maybe by the letter of the law, this is malicious destruction of property. Mm-hmm. There was nothing malicious mm-hmm. in my heart mm-hmm. as I stood on that mountain cutting stub cuts.
So, yeah, when you were walking back home this morning after that, how were you feeling?
I was feeling as though I made a tactical error and was regretting not having gone up the back of the mountain of snow. If I had gone up the back side, I probably could have gotten a bit more done. I was feeling sad that my efforts weren't appreciated by these officers. They weren't able to discern the difference between somebody wantonly hurting a tree mm-hmm. and what I was doing. I made it very clear to them that I knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't cut really big branches. What I was working on were small in diameter, probably, you know, 2 inches in diameter. You know, you do these things carefully. So what's going to happen now? You know, when things like that happen, it's okay to do a cleanup afterwards. Mm-hmm. This is maybe a few years ago. I couldn't really tell. Some mistakes happened mm-hmm. in the care of that tree. Mm-hmm. Let's look at those mistakes and consider how we prune really does make a difference.
It seems like a reasonable enough thing that you could come up with a proposal for Page's pruning permit, and it would have these specifications on it. And then when the police stop you, you say, here's my permit signed by Rich. Here's what it says I can and can't do. How does it look?
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll try it.
That was Paige Bridgens talking about pruning. Thanks, Paige, for looking out for the trees around town. Next, I want to say a couple things about Dory Goldman, who died a few weeks ago. She was a fellow cyclist, year-round cyclist. She lived in Amherst. She was known at the farmers markets for the bread she sold, that she made and sold as part of Backyard Bakery, and for delivering the bread on bicycle, trailer, or later she got it and what's called an ELF. It's like an electric bike car kind of thing. Also, she was a mother and singer and friend. I went to her memorial in Amherst, and they had really great pictures of her during her life. And she spent so much of her life outside, active, in nature. So it's just beautiful to see that. And to see her vigor, see a healthy person in that life. And she's been welcomed back into the arms of nature. So thanks, Dory, for the ways that you've inspired us. This is a song from the memorial. This is John Prine.
Woke up this morning, put on my slippers. I walked in the kitchen and died. And oh, what a feeling when my soul went through the ceiling. And on up into heaven I did ride. When I got there, they did say, John, it happened this way. You slipped upon the floor and hit your head. And all the angels say, just before you passed away, that these were the very last words that you said. Please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. No, I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. Throw my brain in a hurricane, the blind can have my eyes, and the deaf can take both of my ears if they don't mind the size. Get my stomach to Milwaukee if they run out of beer. Put my socks in a cedar box just to get them out of here. A Venus de Milo can have my arms. Look out, I got your nose. Sell my heart to the junk man and give my love to Rose. But please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. Throw my brain in a hurricane, the blind can have my eyes, and the deaf can take both of my ears if they don't mind the size. Oh, man. I give my feet to the footloose, careless, fancy free, and give my knees to the needy. Don't pull that stuff on me. Hand me down my walking cane. It's a sin to tell a lie. Send my mouth way down south and kiss my ass goodbye. But please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. Throw my brain in a hurricane. The blind could have my eyes, and the deaf could take both of my ears if they don't mind the size. That's right.
That is John Prine singing "Please Don't Bury Me." You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I am your host, Ruthie Woodring. And this is WXOJ LP Northampton, 103.3 FM, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. Out There can also be listened to on the archives at weatherbeard.com/Ruthie, R-U-T-H-Y.
The Forbes Library staff would like to remind you of the incredible resource that you have in your local public library. We have tens of thousands of books for you to check out, music CDs, movies, newspapers from around the region, the state, and the country. We have a wide variety of magazines and free computer and internet access every day. We also have our incredible reference services there to help you answer particularly vexing problems. All of this is free, locally available at 20 West Street in Northampton, so come by and check us out in person or at www.forbeslibrary.org. or call 587-1011 for more information.
Alternatively Speaking with Dr. Saskia Cote, a weekly wellness program every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on WXOJ LP Northampton, 103.3 FM, or streaming worldwide, valleyfreeradio.org. We have weekly meditations, informative guests, wellness book discussions, and more. Listen every Wednesday, 6 to 7.
My next clip is an interview with Deirdre Muccio, who's a friend and neighbor. I've been helping her out a little bit because of her carpal tunnel that makes her hands numb sometimes in the morning. And I asked her how she got into being a massage therapist.
I was in art school first time around college in my late teens, early 20s. And I was misdiagnosed as, not having to make any serious adjustments around the vision for maybe my mid-50s. Meanwhile, my vision was like going down the tubes really fast due to retinitis pigmentosa. They didn't know that. But at any rate, so then I left school, burned my bridges, figured out I was dealing with something very formidable, and then I just kind of wandered around for 15 years not knowing what to do.
As you were losing your vision.
Yes.
Vision.
Yeah, it was very, very severe. I could barely read print by the time I was 25. Not normally. And I could barely see a face, by the time I was 35. And then I lost color and stuff by the time I was probably 40. Mm-hmm. But then I needed to do something, and I hadn't been in school for about 15 years, and I went to UMass, and I was too scared to apply to get into the MFA, which is what I really should have done, to do some fiction writing, creative writing.
But the MFA?
MFA?
Oh, MFA, yeah. Masters of Fine Arts?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So instead I just did a second bachelor's in English Lit, which was fun, but didn't take me anywhere. I still couldn't read print, and the technology with the screen readers wasn't very good yet. UMass's disability department was awful. So I had a roommate who was a professor of art who actually taught at UMass, and she said, "Why don't you study massage? You like sculpture, you're very healthy, you jog, you're into touch." Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like pulling a little piece of paper out of the hat, should you do this or should you do that? And I said, "Well, I'll try it." And so I went to the commission, and they said, "Well, we can't tell you what to do. You just tell us what you might want to do, and then we'll tell you whether we can give you the money." And then I went down to Still Point. I went to a little school in Connecticut that catered towards people with disabilities, and I was there for about 6 months before I realized that they were never going to get accredited, and I wanted to be accredited so I could work in a nursing home or something like that.
As a licensed massage therapist, you mean?
Yeah. So I switched over to Still Point, who didn't want me. I walked in with a dog and being blind, and they flipped out, and "We can't accommodate you, blah, 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 blah." And then they must have consulted a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
Because they changed their tune real quick. I got a call back like a couple of days later saying, "Sure, come on, why don't you try, take a course, one course, see how it goes." And I did a shiatsu course, which was pretty mind-blowing. Uh-huh. And they used me often as the demo model so I could feel what was happening. Then I turned out being like one of their model students, Uh-huh. And actually I would stand behind the teacher with my hands on her hands, mm-hmm. and feel the moves. If I weren't the demo model, then that's the way it would be. I would stand behind the teacher with my hands on her hands, and I could tell what was going on. So that really worked, and people really enjoyed seeing that.
Uh-huh.
Somehow that... I don't know, somehow it helped others kind of learn. So it's just kind of, it's just kind of out of the blue. And initially I just kind of thought of it as like labor. It's like the difference between writing fiction or painting. Let's say the visual arts, painting or writing fiction, and then doing ceramics. Ceramics felt really good, when I did some ceramics in it, but it was not that same kind of mind high where you're just so lost and all these possibilities, mm-hmm. That kind of imaginative realm is just much more concrete. So and that's kind of the way I felt about massage for a while. And then I started to...
Wait, then
it was just for manual labor, uh-huh. Just like kneading muscles, uh-huh. and doing all that. But it didn't take too long before I sort of discovered the power of it, where you can actually help people feel better and heal more quickly and give them that kind of holy hour, that 1 hour of the week where they actually allow themselves to relax or do nothing, And a lot of the people I had were... people just go, that didn't know how to ever stop. It would be abnormal for them to, to just stop and give themselves an hour to just decompress.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of power in that. Mm-hmm. And then you know, helping people with chronic pain sort of see what it felt, what could feel like to not have pain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to bypass all these episodes with them, you know, getting so stressed out that then something in their body would just go haywire. So that was very, very powerful. And then being blind people, I had a lot of really heavy people who figured because I couldn't see them that they were more comfortable mm-hmm. with me, uh-huh. you know, that I wouldn't be so judgmental right off the bat. Uh-huh. That was kind of fun. I don't know whether I really had an advantage just working just tactily. And actually, the very first class I was in where we were supposed to put our hands on someone and start to learn some strokes, the comment the teacher made was, oh, I can see you're not afraid of flesh. You know, it's like, because there were other people, even at Still Point, there were a lot of people that would only work with one other person. Uh-huh. You know, very, very afraid, very tentative to let someone touch them or to touch someone they didn't know. And I was never like that. And I think they probably didn't get very far in terms of, you know, their business, running a business, because, you know, you got to be able to deal with strangers. So it was just kind of fluky, and it worked great. And so what is this? So let's see. I got a license from Still Point in 95. I'd studied in Connecticut like 2 years earlier, and I just this last year had to give it up due to the carpal tunnel that's got so severe just in this last 6 months or year. There's other things that threw my wrists out, working a dog, doing some rug hooking, knitting, stuff mm-hmm. like that. So it's been really hard to not work because it's just such a beautiful thing to do to, you know, help people feel better. Yeah. Plus being blind, having people come to you, you know, as opposed to me have to get in a car or go to an office or something like that. Yeah. You know, that really worked really, really well.
Yeah, how do you deal with that loss of not having that, I don't know, that engagement?
Or like, yeah, more I miss isolating. I mean, I get out a lot and stuff like that, but it's still, it feels good, and it was good money, you know, and it's very special, it's very intimate, you know. People trust you, or they don't trust you, but mostly people trust me, and I suppose those that didn't like my kind of massage never came back, but that generally didn't happen. Yeah. It's hard. I haven't completely kept like three people that I'll see. One's a woman that's going on 80. I met her at the clinic just before graduation. We ran a public clinic, and I met her there, and she only books every 4 weeks, so I still see her. There was this one time, this was so amazing. I had this woman, a young woman, and she had her mom coming from India, and she wanted her to come for a massage. And I'd done some massage work for the younger woman. So her mom just would never schedule with me. And I just said, leave her alone. You know, they tell us in school, don't pressure anybody. If they want a massage, fine. But don't give her a gift of a massage to someone who's, you know, uncertain about that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she finally got her mom to come. Mm-hmm. So the woman gets on the table, and she's got her bra, and she's got her shorts on, and she was very wary, you know, being mm-hmm. touched by someone she didn't know. So once I actually put my hands on her back and started to do a stroke, you know, down the back, a warming stroke down the back, I think as soon as she felt my hands on her and that it was not an invasive kind of touch, and I said, you see if you undid your bra, I'd be able to do the stroke, you know, nice and smooth from your neck and shoulders all the way down the small of your back. She flung her clothes off so fast, and there she just flung them across the room on the floor. And she was so high when she left there, and her daughter told me later she was so high all day. And I think it just must have been her discovering something about herself or something new. Yeah. People surprise themselves sometimes, you know.
So do you think that you'll do a massage potentially more in the future, or do you think your health situation will probably not allow it? I mean, if not, what any ideas what the future might hold?
I'm thinking I probably should not be working at all, but it's just too hard to give up. It was just sort of the perfect fit for me. And then I did some rug hooking, which brought me back to the art realm, where I remember color, and so I was working with fiber and color, and I made rugs that people just blew them away because the colors were so gorgeous, and that was like water painting, you know, watercolor painting, that brought me back to that high of creating. And I think that also contributed to my carpal tunnel. Mm-hmm. So not doing that now either. Yeah. So I don't know. It's kind of hard being blind and losing use of your hands. You know, I wake up in the morning and they're numb. And so I feel like my life's just been at a standstill for good almost 2 years now. So it's been difficult. And I don't know, you know, where I'll come out on it. I've just turned 60, so it's still a little young to say, all right, I'm an old lady, I'm retired now, I'll just, you know, whittle away the time doing whatever. So it's hard. I don't know where I'm going from here. I just don't. I don't think I'll ever be able to work the way I did even a year ago. I had been very, very athletic when I was first losing my vision. I was kind of clumsy, and then I became very, very athletic as one way to deal with it, and biked and hiked and ran and get in the water and swim like 3 miles nonstop. It was just, I was just crazy. It was like I was making up for lost time. I was super, super fit. I could just race over the hills. And so if someone wanted to stack wood, yeah, I'll stack wood for you, you know, like 5 hours straight. I was like a machine, you know, it was just like anything just to, you know, you see how thin I am.
Yeah, you look very thin.
Yeah, but I mean, it was just anything to put some shape on me. Mm-hmm. And now I'm whittled down to nothing. I used to have, you know, people say you used to look tough, you know, like you could see your muscles and you look like a dancer or whatever. Mm-hmm. But now it's terrible. Kind of interesting. But bodies do tell you a lot. Bodies and tissues, so to speak, in quotes, you know, they tell you a lot about a person and how they live and what they do and how they're overexerting. And I mean, I've seen young kids that hurt, you know, jump hurdles, you know, that were kind of Western Mass champs. Uh-huh. And their upper bodies were like loose like a swimmer's, and their lower bodies were just, you could feel their muscles, you could feel each little muscle bundle or, you know, kind of lactic acid build up, and it just didn't seem healthy, you know, kind of overexertion. Yeah. So it's fun. It was fun.
Thanks for sharing.
That was Deirdre Muccio talking about being a massage therapist. So I set up a voicemail account so anyone can call in a submission to Out There, thanks to my housemate, Alex Jarrett, for the whole bike path phone system that makes things like this easy. The number is 413-825-6795, extension 301. So now, there's been a lot of winter going on. There's been a lot of winter going on the last few weeks, and I've just been thinking about songs to get me through. Here's a song I like. This is Clifton Chenier's Zydeco Two-Step. We'll be right back.
was a fair vaccination.
Clift Engineers, that a go to step. Next, I have a little 1 minute clip from trying to get from Amherst to Northampton on Sunday. It's about 1:22. I'm walking down University Drive trying to hitchhike. Will someone pick me up? Oh, that looked hopeful. I think they were just trying to not run me over. It's on a Sunday. The V43 runs once an hour. I was trying to catch the bus from Amherst back to Northampton. And I got on the bus, paid my $1.25 in front of the Amherst post office, and then I realized I only had one mitten, so I immediately got off at the next stop, like half a block down, turn around, walk back to the post office. Aha, somebody's pulled over. Aha, my lucky day. I didn't take long. Woohoo. Hi.
Hi. You look pretty sad there.
Yeah. Well, I'm Ruthie.
But people don't do it anymore.
Not very much. In fact, I've hardly seen anyone else out just walking at all today. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks again.
Good luck.
Yeah. See ya. Woohoo! All right, so I have one clip left for today, which is someone that I ran into downtown telling me about a new apartment they had just moved into.
It's a little crazy how it felt when you first moved into that apartment.
Pretty overwhelming for me. There's a story behind me surviving what I went through to wait. I was very persistent and checked in with them almost every day. And Kim's like, oh, it's just once a month. Oh, okay. So then I end up doing once a month. Uh-huh. But I never gave up.
How long would you say you were on the Northampton Housing Authority wait list?
5 years.
Oh, wow.
Almost five.
Wow.
It was a while.
And so then when you moved into Salvo...
I didn't even know what room to sit in, Ruthie.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I sat on the toilet because it was my toilet. I just sat there expecting somebody to come in, and it was extremely overwhelming for me. And then I didn't know what room to sit in, you know, because I have a living room and I have a bedroom. And it was like, that went on for a couple days. And then I settled down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that I have a balcony because I can just step outside and enjoy the most beautiful sunrise ever with my coffee, you know. There's quite a few blessings that I did. I went through 48 states just trying to find work. Been on the streets a lot longer than 5 years. Been on the streets since 1981. Just trying to survive.
Sounds
still overwhelmed.
I
mean, it's a good overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's not an anxiety overwhelming. It's the best feeling. You can't even describe the feeling. It's like better than a hot fudge sundae, and it's better than seeing a rainbow in the sky, and it's better than, I mean, I like the sun on my face, so nothing's better than that.
Uh-huh.
But
it's like having a place where it's yours and you're
it's
you
mine
belong.
And there's contentment now, which I didn't have before.
So you feel safe in your apartment itself?
Some of the people that bother me, they have friends within the building, so my second night there, somebody was on the outside of my door. I didn't open it, but they were like, we know where you live, and it's okay.
Yeah.
They're going to keep doing it, Ruthie. Yeah. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful to these guys. I mean, I want to send them flowers with a thank you card.
Yeah.
It's the best thing that's happened to me in a long time.
You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Truthy Woodring. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5. And I got one more song to close out the hour. Dwayne, I'm thinking of you.
Me dio una sirimba un domingo en la mañana cuando menos lo pensaba. Caí redondo como una guanábana sobre la alcantarilla. ¿Será la presión o me ha subido la bilirrubina?
This is Juan Luis Guerra.
Y me entró una calentura y me fui poniendo blanco como bola en naftalina. Me llevaron a un hospital de gente, supuestamente. En la emergencia recepcionista escuchaba la lotería. Alguien se apiada de mí, grité perdiendo el sentido. Y una enfermera se acercó a mi oreja y me dijo, tranquilo Bobby, tranquilo. Me acarició con sus manos de Bengay y me dijo, ¿qué le pasa, atleta? Y le conté con lujo de detalles lo que me había sucedido. Hay que chequearte la presión, pero la sala está ocupada. Y mi querido, en este hospital no hay luz para un electrocardiograma. Abrí los ojos como luna llena y me agarré la cabeza. Porque es muy duro pasar el Niágara en bicicleta. No me digan que los médicos se fueron. No me digan que no tienen anestesia. No me digan que el alcohol se lo bebieron. Y que el hilo de coser fue bordado en un mantel. No me digan que las pinzas se perdieron. Me escribió muy dulcemente, lo siento atleta. Me acarició con sus manos de Bengay y siguió su destino. Y oí claramente cuando dijo a otro paciente, tranquilo Bobby. Bajé los ojos a media asta y me agarré la cabeza. Porque es muy duro pasar el Niágara en bicicleta.
No me digan que los médicos se fueron. No me digan que no tienen anestesia.
Thanks for listening.